And joining me right now here on the phone line, go over the latest on Major League Baseball and probably the college football playoff. He's my good friend, Chris Bonanno. Chris, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. There's no shortage of things to talk about, so it's a pretty exciting time to be on, right?
All right, here's what I don't understand. So if you cheat as a pitcher, your punishment is 10-game suspension with pay. I want to get that deal. We should cheat all the time then, Chris. What's your take?
Yeah, the suspension with pay is rather curious. You know, this is a really complicated issue to me, and I'll be honest with you. If I'd come on yesterday, I may have even had a little bit different take on it. But the example I want to use is Tyler Glasnow. Tyler Glasnow, for those who don't know, has a partially torn UCL. They're going to try to rehab it. He's going to be out a while at the very least. And he claims that he changed his grip because he didn't use something sticky 2 starts ago against the Nationals. He began to feel pain where he didn't feel it. He didn't normally feel anything. And then obviously he threw against the White Sox and what happened. And my thought is, I don't think you can do this in the middle of the season. Yeah, I don't like changing the rules like this in the middle of the season. I also, not just a pitcher safety standpoint, I wonder if this is less safe for the batters because you're obviously throwing a baseball is not fun to get hit by at any speed, and you're seeing the velocity for these pitchers go up and up, and you're liable to possibly see, you know, a ball get away, and obviously that's putting the hitters in danger. So I think this is a very nuanced question. I'm not saying that everybody should be able to go out there, you know, like it's major league, right? And have different substances on there. But, you know, I think there's some sort of a happy medium that can be reached. I forget which player said that yesterday. I think there's some sort of a medium. Like, you know, they're legislating against you hear some pictures coming out now, I use rosin and sunscreen. Well, are you going to tell pitchers they can't wear sunscreen out? You know, because the rosin bag is legal. So it's a very difficult thing to legislate against. The other interesting point is if they are going to check as many times as some have said and Major League Baseball has intimated, we've been so hooked up on pace of play to the point where we've instituted this ridiculous rule with the relievers where you've got to stay in for 3 batters, which is, you know, it's just, you're not shaving that much time off the game, and you're ruining the sort of the integrity of the game. So if we're going to check this many times, aren't we going to blow past that? And aren't the games going to be longer? So, yeah, I'm not in love with instituting this right now. And I don't know, in an era where we're still looking at, you know, being dominated by the shift, I'm not sure how much this is going to help baseball's offense problem. It's still better than moving the mound back a foot, which would be catastrophic. But
look,
I'm not with this.
You can't make excuses. You got injured. There's nothing you can do. Rehab and get ready for the rest of the season if you can come back. I think it's BS what he did, saying that that's the excuse for how he got injured. That's just my take, Chris. I'm sorry.
I understand that, and it's possible that's not what happened. You know, obviously, we're seeing what at least feels like an uptick in pitcher injuries this year, and I think that was somewhat to be expected. I mean, you think about how few innings these pitchers threw last year and the unusual nature of it. You're asking them to throw a lot more innings this year. You're liable to have more injuries, and obviously Glasnow is among them. So we can't definitively say that, but he makes some good points. I also understand the idea that, you know, it shouldn't matter. You shouldn't be allowed to do something like that. But, you know, I think of a pitcher, Adam Wainwright is another pitcher who's come out in recent days. I would say, you know, Adam Wainwright's probably a very respected person in the game. He came out and he said he tried the sticky stuff. He didn't like it. Now, the question is, you know, some people are going to equate this, like, you can't equate this to steroids, for instance. I think it's or performance enhancing drugs. I don't think it's that case at all. I also think, and one thing we haven't touched on, the grip of the ball from what players are discussing is different from year to year. And I think that's something to discuss as well. I also think it depends on what type of substance you're using. So in other words, the rosin bag is at the mound. It's given. You can do that. So there is an admission here at Major League Baseball, but the pitchers need some more grip. So the idea is that everybody's got to get on the same standard as to what is acceptable and what isn't with respect to grip. I understand that this is an attempt to do that. My question is, should we be doing this in the middle of a season?
I agree.
Especially a season where the innings, the number of innings, the number of pitches the pitchers are being asked to throw is way up. And now, potentially, you're asking pitchers to change things about their delivery. And that's really the point that Glasnow brought up yesterday. So I think that's my biggest concern there. But it's not a one-size-fits-all topic. You know, I'm one of those things where, you know, your point of view is very valid and what have you. But, you know, overall, I'm not in favor of rule changes in the middle of the season.
I agree.
You know, it's just not good.
I feel like it should be one of those things in the off season, and then owners and players agree on it.
That's my thing. I agree with you 100%. I really do. And why are you changing the ball? It's kind of crazy. I still can't get over. And we're with Chris Bonanno. So if you're a casual fan, you look at this sport. So let's get this straight. The Astros cheated with the garbage can. None of the players got in trouble. None of them.
No.
None. And now pitchers can cheat and get a vacation. Huh? That's what I don't understand about this sport. Like, who does get in trouble with this sport? That's what I don't get.
And you know what the interesting thing is, Mark? And this is something that just came to my mind, right? Let's say you're a team that wants to maybe chip away at the innings a little bit, wants to give, you know, let your pitcher get out of the rotation for a couple or starts. This is a way for them to get off the roster. You don't have to put them on the IL, right? You could just say, hey, go out there and have a substance or what have you. But what I'm waiting for is for this to happen in September or even October. Can you imagine, you know, something like a pitcher goes out there for game one of a playoff series and it's they get caught with sunscreen and they're out for the rest of the series and into the next series. Can you even imagine what the consternation would be like? I can't. Again, how can you legislate against sunscreen? I don't think you can.
If I would have told you 2 years ago, seriously, if I would have told you 2 years ago, Chris, guys would be knocked out for using sunscreen or they got COVID, you'd be like, what are you talking about? That's how crazy the world has changed with this sport.
The sport has changed quite a bit here. I mean, you think about last year, right? We came up with a playoff structure about an hour before the Yankees and the Nationals tipped off the season there in July. We just said, hey, we're going to have eight teams in each league make the playoffs. You know, it's one of those things where this feels like that, in that we're kind of just flying by the seat of our pants here and just kind of, you know, I don't say making it up as we go along, but certainly the leadership, I think, at the highest levels of MLB, you got to question some of these decisions. Obviously, we could go down the rabbit hole about not only the reliever role, but the wildly unpopular rule of having the runner on second base in extra innings, which is just dreadful. And you just begin to wonder, what are we doing here with this game? What are we doing?
Okay, I want to do research. Like, we really haven't had any games go to the 14th or 15th inning. They've mostly been ending 10th or 11th. You know what I mean? Like, the games are efficient. The one I can't stand is the doubleheader, only 7 innings. And I think we talked about this last time. I don't get that. Why is that still in play for this year? I don't understand.
You know, obviously it was brought in because of you know, the COVID nature of things last year, trying not to use the pitching up too much and trying to get the games over with as quickly as possible. I'm with you. I'm with you. I will tell you this. The seven-inning doubleheader is a little less egregious to me than the runner on second base, because that rule, it completely changes the fundamental nature of what you've done. For, you know, you play a certain game for 3 hours now, and now you're gonna play a different game. It's kind of sort of the same argument, but it's a little apples and oranges to the people who don't like 3-on-3 hockey or the penalty shootout. Again, hockey, you got to get the game over with, because that's a little bit more taxing. So I actually understand that a little bit more. But it just feels like you're playing a different sport. Like, you know, could you imagine the NBA playoffs? We went to, you know, overtime, and all of a sudden, hey, we're just going to make it a 1-on-1 here. You know, like, hey, we're just going to pull the Nets and the Bucks off the floor. You know, we're going to make it Giannis versus Kevin Durant or something like that.
Hey, you know what? You would watch it, though. I would. I know it's ridiculous, but I would watch it.
I won't lie to you.
I would watch it too. I mean, and I'm not here to say I'm not watching it. There is, you know, part of it almost feels like it's catering to the broadcasters, right? Mm-hmm. You're getting a little bit more broadcast certainty. There's less broadcast certainty that, because there's no time in baseball, right?
Yeah.
So you know, we know generally speaking, except for overtime when a basketball game is going to end, hockey game, football game. Baseball is wide open, right? So this is part of what you get. But you think about, you know, when you have a doubleheader here, you're getting 2 7-inning games, and potentially because you're playing less time, you're increasing the possibility of having a situation where the runner is going to be on second base. And doesn't it just feel like kind of Mickey Mouse? It just doesn't feel like baseball to me.
Okay, what if it was on first base? Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, you know, still no. I got to be honest with you. It's not. We've done. You know, the one thing baseball has, and it's not necessarily competing against any other sport. But what do you think when you think of baseball strengths? What do you think of? You think of tradition. And when you get rid of that, you're going away from your strength. As a sport, you know, we're talking about scoring a run here, you know, and you know, I hearken back, Aroldis Chapman came in extra innings the other night for the Yankees, and he didn't do well. He didn't keep the runner off second base and lost the game. You know, the headline was the next game, you know, the Chapman didn't do well. The runner's on second base. You know, the runner's supposed to score. Moreover, there's an element of luck that comes into play with this. So, depending on where the lineup is, you may have someone up that can bunt, and the other team may not. And that could be the difference in the game. If you can't lay a bunt down there, you're basically having to hit a base hit. If you have someone up that can bunt, well, then you can move them over, hit a fly ball, and get your run. So there's an element of luck there that's no good. And the same way there's an element of luck as to who can actually be the runner on second base. So there's too much randomness involved in this. And now, perhaps I'm a little biased. As a Yankee fan, the Yankees are terrible with this runner on second base thing, because all they're trying to do is hit home runs. And that's not what they're not really built for, the situational type of baseball. And they've not done well as a result, generally speaking, with this rule. But you shouldn't compromise the integrity of what had been built with the 7 or 9 innings. But, you know, just one other thing, you know, we talk about this, you know, tradition and changing things. It's like the idea when Madison Bumgarner threw a 7-inning no-hitter. Is it a no-hitter or not?
It
completely, you know, if you're not going to call it a no-hitter, which Major League Baseball apparently is not recognizing it, then you're basically admitting that you have a substandard game. And it doesn't make any sense to me.
It's a no-hitter. 7 innings, he threw it. That's a complete game. Notice he get the complete game shutout, winning the game, but he doesn't get a no-hitter? It's a no-hitter in my book. In my rules, no-hitter for Bumgarner. That's my thing.
I would agree. It's not like he was, you know, able to pitch 9 innings. You know, they say, hey, you've got 7 innings to pitch. You did it. I think it goes down as a no-hitter. You know, in the same way that you can throw a perfect game, even if your team didn't score a run, right? If it's happened before where, you know, you throw a no-hitter, your team is lost, or your team is, the Yankees did it in 1990, you know, or perfect. No, you if you do what you need to do in nine innings, then there you go. I think that's no problem. I think, you know, baseball is kind of look, I know what they're doing because the offensive problems are really, really massive right now. But I don't think the way to fix those is by messing with the pitcher's grip. I think we're opening Pandora's box to injuries, which are a really big issue right now. And I think, you know, baseball needs to take a deep breath and look at these things in the offseason.
We're here with Chris Bonanno. I love getting you fired up. What's great about you is if the Yankees were good at small ball and winning 10-inning games with a guy on second, it'd be interesting to hear what your opinion would be on the air then.
It would be the same thing. I to be perfectly honest with you, I think it would. I guess here's how I could crystallize this, right? I don't like compromising the integrity of the sport because we feel a need to get the game over with, or we need to appeal to a certain segment of the fan base for monetary reasons, right? No. Whoever wins, wins. If someone doesn't want to watch because of that, then that's their issue. But I don't like compromising the sport itself to, you know, appeal to a certain, perhaps, you know, portion of the fan base that, you know, perhaps are, you know, trying to go after a younger audience or what have you. No, the game has been great for over 100 years. Let the game be the game.
This is how I know I'm old. Like, this conversation right here, I know I'm getting old because I have no sympathy for players that complain they have to play their sport. I'm sorry, because we see this in the NBA all the time. Like James Harden last night. Give him credit. He got out there, but he had to get out there. That's your job. Get out there and play basketball. I'm sorry.
I do give James Harden a lot of credit for playing last night. It's clear he wasn't himself. You know, and perhaps he wouldn't have if Kyrie Irving had twisted his ankle. But, no, obviously at the same time, you make a good point. James Harden is making an awfully lot of money to go out there and do what he does, as are, you know, most of the other players on that court. But certainly, no, I agree. You know, I bet anybody listening to the show right now, if they were given the opportunity to you know, go out there perhaps in a compromised state or go out there tired or what have you, they would do it. Not just because of the money, but also because, heck, you get to play in a major league sporting event. So I understand where you're coming from.
Look, I give credit to Harden, and I've been critical of him, but he's not 100%. He could not do what he usually does, and he's one of the great players in today's NBA. He went 46 minutes last night, which is remarkable, and only scored 5 points. I've been there on the court. If my shot's not falling, I got to help out in other ways. It was great, and then Durant, 49, triple-double. Did you see some of this game last night? I think that's my question.
I did watch the game. I will tell you, it was a battle between the Yankees actually coming back and having a one feel-good moment coming back to defeat Toronto last night, and the Nets and the Bucks, but it was compelling television for sure. I went back and thought about it. At a bare minimum, Kevin Durant's performance last night is the best playoff performance since LeBron's in 2012 against the Celtics in Game 6. And it may be even further than that. I mean, the stats are better, and he had to do it. They were down 17. You know, Harden was out there, but he really wasn't out there. Didn't have a lot of help, even though Jeff Green had an out-of-body experience last night and couldn't miss. But short of that, really the only shot creator out there for the most part. And it wasn't just that he did it. It was the efficiency with which he shot. 16 for 22. Then you add in the rebounds, the assists. And again, the fact they had to win. If they go down 3-2, they go back to Milwaukee. You don't know about James Harden and Kyrie Irving. The series could be a wrap. It feels like that's the moment, and I truly hate saying this as a Knicks fan. It feels like that could be the moment that team goes from, you know, question mark to maybe that team that begins the run of maybe winning three titles in a row. Because if they win this series and if they're healthy, the NBA playoffs are a wrap. They just are. There's no one's beating that team 4 out of 7 games in a series. There's just way, way too much firepower. And I admit sometimes they, the team can be a little bit unlikable, but you have to give credit to where credit is due last night. That was one of the great performances in the history of the NBA last night by Kevin Durant.
And it wasn't like Milwaukee got blown out. One possession game with less than a minute to go. They're right there. And, like, the thing is, like, I don't think people realize, like, Giannis is 7 feet tall. And Durant's, what, 6'10"? He's probably 7 feet as well. He's coming down the court on you. And he runs like a guard. And he's almost 7 feet tall. And then he's pulling up for that three-point shot. It must be so scary in person if you have to guard him, Chris.
It's got to be. What's funny, though? You mentioned that. So, first off, as someone who admittedly was pulling for Milwaukee last night, it is imminently frustrating to see them play such a good first half and then decide it's going to be 1-on-5 ball the second half. We're going to give the ball to Middleton, and we're going to stand around and watch him go 1-on-5. We're going to give the ball to Giannis. We're going to see him go 1-on-5. And the offense really, really bogged down. The other thing is, when Giannis pulls up and takes a three, don't you think the defense, generally it's been Blake Griffin, don't you think the defender takes a big sigh of relief? It's one of those things where he's got such, and as great as Durant was last night, Giannis wasn't as good. Giannis was very, very good last night when you look at his statistics and the impact he had on the game. But if I were him, I'd take it inside every single time. You know, what's he shooting from? He's shooting a very, very low percentage from three in the playoffs. And I think he needs to put more of the pressure. You know, Blake Griffin shouldn't be able to guard him, right? You know, Blake Griffin's doing a very good job, and we can get into that and how he ended up on Brooklyn in the first place, and that's a little iffy in and of its own right. But he's doing a pretty good job. He can't guard Giannis one-on-one. So, you know, in game six, and if there is a game seven, you know, I'd like to see that. One other point about Durant. He played every single second of that game. And for someone who is coming off of an Achilles to do that at his age, unbelievable.
I know. I think we're going seven. I think Milwaukee's winning game six, and then we'll be back there in Brooklyn. What's your pick?
I tend to agree with you, but I am operating under the assumption that we're getting the same Nets team as last night. For instance, if I get a Kyrie Irving back in game six and he's pretty close to what he was, then I'm not sure, because it just feels like, for as much as we established that the Nets are championship good last night, there may be establishing an aura of inevitability. We also established, perhaps, that we might be about ready to label Milwaukee as something they're not going to like. When you consider what happened in the bubble last year and what you consider here. So there, when you blow a 17-point lead at the half to a team with one of their big three essentially left, yikes. That's something that's going to have a residue. Another thing is, you know, if you're Milwaukee, you gave how many picks up for Drew Holiday? And that's what I got. And, you know, he's a nice player. But if you're going to give all those picks up, and what they did also, Eric Bledsoe in the deal, you got to get better than that. He's a good all-around player. But if you're going to give up all that, you get a James Harden-type player like the Nets did. So I think, you know, one of these teams, they both went all in. One of them's going out in the second round, and the Clippers might end up joining them there, especially with the Kawhi Leonard news today.
Yeah.
But one of them is going out in this series in the second round at the least. And certainly all the pressure in the world is going to be on Milwaukee. You got to believe if Milwaukee loses this series, Mike Budenholzer is probably going to be out in Milwaukee, especially after last night. He's getting a ton of criticism. Having said that, you know, if the big three isn't healthy, you know, could Milwaukee still win this series?
Yeah.
They could. And they are missing Dante DiVincenzo, who's the starting two guard. He got hurt against Miami. So there is that. But honestly, you know, they could. But I could also see an idea where they were just, well, the, balling out in the court and Milwaukee gets beat by 20 points in game six. I could see that just because there's such residual from this. And there's a lot. It just felt like they were so tight last night. I don't know what you think, Mark. It felt like Milwaukee got really tight when the Nets hit a couple threes and it got under 10 points.
Because they don't know how to win. That's why they don't have the experience of closing out. They don't know what to do. They haven't been there. You're saying it. All right, let's end with this. I want you to know this. As a Miami Hurricanes fan, I know that's your team. So
yes.
I have a shirt that I wear. Like, I have a shirt of, I think, every team here in Florida. So I have, like, my laundry day shirt. I have a random, like, Florida Tech basketball one I wear. And then...
Wonderful.
And then I have a orange, the Miami Hurricanes, where it just says, the, and then it has a photo of the logo, the U. I will wear this. So I'll wear it randomly on, like, laundry day. Or I don't feel like showering and I got to go to the store. Do you know how many people give me the U symbol? Just randomly? Like, I'll wear a Gator shirt, no Chomp. Seminoles, no Tomahawk. I wear the U shirt everywhere I go. People give me the U symbol. I want you to know
it's that. It's a fun thing to flash the U, right? It's a fun thing when you see, you know, another Kane fan. It's an easy, quick thing to do, right? You just put your hands up, and it's a fun thing. And it wasn't always around like that, at least to my knowledge as I grew up as a fan. But you know, it's really become pretty prevalent here in the last couple of decades. It's just a fun thing to do. And, you know, it's one of those things we probably don't have as many fans as, say, you know, a University of Florida or what have you. So, you know, especially around here. So when you see one, yeah, it's a cool thing to do. So, hey, you know, if you ever want to come on our side, you know, you can do that anytime you want.
What's your random, like, laundry day shirt? Or you got to go work in the yard. Is there a random sports one you have?
Okay, I'm going to really dig deep on this one because I wore it yesterday.
Okay.
And I'm going, you were not expecting this one.
What?
So I attended WrestleMania 24 in Orlando back, I guess, what, 12, 13 years now. And I really thought I needed to buy a wrestling t-shirt, you know, to go. So I bought one of Carlito at the time was Stephen Berry's. And I liked Carlito. He ended up getting released pretty much right after that. But nonetheless, I wore my Carlito wrestling shirt yesterday. So I will see the U shirt, and I will raise it exponentially. And now have just outed myself as someone who bought a Carlito shirt on the radio. So how about that?
What color is the shirt?
It is yellow. So you will see it.
Oh. I imagine you were like at... You're at the t-shirt stand. You're like, give me that Carlito. And they're like, are you sure? Are you sure about that? Yeah, come on. Well, let's go.
Yeah, if you remember Stephen Berry's, it was like every shirt was like really, really cheap there. And that was the whole point of it. Also probably what drove him out of business. But, you know, I dug him. I thought he had a pretty cool mid-card act and was disappointed when he got released. But, you know, you asked about a random shirt and – You know, I guess I thought I wore that shirt for a reason yesterday, and now I know why.
That is fantastic. You ever notice, like, you can't wear a wrestling shirt? Like, if we're going out to the bars, hey, we're going to go out to the bars Friday night. Maybe we'll meet some women. You can't wear the wrestling shirt.
No. I will tell you, the Carlito shirt, you know, I wore it to WrestleMania. I can't say that I wore it, like, super randomly. It was a fun shirt to wear. When, you know, me and my buddies would get together and watch pay-per-view, like to wear the Carlito shirt. You going out to, you know, a bar or whatever, you probably keep the Carlito shirt in the closet.
How about...
against Carlito, like again. Yeah, in general.
How about I get a John Cena shirt and just wear it when we go out to lunch sometime? Will I get any looks?
Will you get... Well, I think John Cena's a lot more mainstream than someone like a Carlito was. So I don't think you'd get any like looks askance wearing that. Now he is allegedly about to maybe come back here for a little bit. So I don't know if that will change things, but
hey.
No, I think you'd be all right wearing a John Cena shirt. The only thing the only stares you might get are from wrestling fans, because obviously he's a very polarizing person within the wrestling community. But outside of the wrestling community, well, I think you'd be fine. I really do.
They can't see me. You know what it does? And I'll let you go. It's like you could weed out who's a wrestling fan. Like if we go into a random sports bar and I show up with a John Cena shirt, guys that love wrestling, we can weed them out because they'll give reactions.
That's you're absolutely right. He is he's as polarizing a figure as there's ever been in wrestling, and you're going to see that when he comes back, maybe allegedly in front of crowds here next month.
I'm going to get the armbands and the hat as well.
Oh, okay. Now, if you wear the armbands, then I can't make any promises there. You get the bright colored John Cena armbands. Now, then you're on your own. You might get the stairs.
My time is up. My time is now. You can't stop me. What's it called? His name's Chris Bonanno. My man, thanks for your help and have a great day. All right.
You too, Mark. Thank you for having me.